Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings. Hastan anila nijone go shavotya, nijone go shavotya. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Ah!
music from the drum That Tribe off their Candy Records CD entitled Best of Both Worlds. That title refers to how we, Native people, live in two worlds where tribal and modern culture exist side by side. It is not always easy to do so, but looking at today's Native youth, I know our indigenous traditions will still be part of Indian life in this 21st century. The name of that song was Sensitive Warrior. A Native warrior was trained not only to be a strong defender, but also to be sensitive to the needs of the community, especially to the youth who looked to warriors for guidance. Asque, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's broadcast is Program 6 of Wolf Mountain Radio's series entitled Speaking Out for Socioeconomic Justice, Conversation with Youth Activists at the 2009 5th Annual Immokalee Encuentro. Encuentro is a Spanish term meaning gathering. Yad Kiddushi Native Center has the privilege to participate every year at a fine gathering known as the Immokalee Encuentro that concerns itself with socioeconomic justice and human rights. The primary focus of annual Encuentros is the exploitation of farm workers by agribusiness, food, and restaurant industry. The gathering supports the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, hosted by the National Grassroots Organization, the Student Farm Worker Alliance. The CIW Encuentro is also assisted by Interfaith Action. Farm workers, mostly Latino, Haitian, and Mayan Indians, labor long hours in the hot sun, harvesting the fruits and vegetables most Americans eat. The exhaustive hard work is nothing less than modern-day slavery. Abusive crew bosses, sub-poverty wages, health problems from exposure to toxic pesticides and herbicides, exemption from USDA labor laws, and overcrowded squalid housing are the harshful conditions of living and working Florida's agricultural fields and packing plants. It is also important to remember that a long history of U.S. foreign policy and economic globalization has caused a great number of people to cross the U.S. border in order to find work. Many farm workers are under U.S. law illegal aliens. They risk deportation from U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service. In addition, Collier County Sheriff deputies have INS authority. Please keep these conditions in mind as you listen to the program. The Encuentro agenda also encourages briefings and workshops on a multitude of other serious issues of concern to young people in hopes of creating a better world. One of the most enjoyable aspects of attending the annual Encuentros is the opportunity for me to talk with participants who come from various geographic and cultural backgrounds. Some are longtime activists who represent a national organization or campaign. Other participants may represent a community group that is an ally to the Coalition Immokalee Workers and Student Farm Worker Alliance. There are also some young people who are new to social justice issues and are here for their first time. In addition, Encuentro participants range in age from high school to graduate school. Above all, the Encuentro is a space where people can openly share ideas and experiences in an atmosphere of respect and equality for everyone while we work for justice and broader efforts for creating a better world. My first guest is Candice Vallejo. I have had the pleasure to meet Candice at several youth conferences over the years. She is a nice young woman dedicated to social justice and human rights. Candice, welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio. Here at the Encuentro, during a session on solidarity, you shared two letters from farm workers in Thailand and in Brazil. It is important for people to be aware of
situations of injustice throughout the world, even if your activism is focused on a specific campaign or geographic area. In many cases, poor people's struggles stem from the exploitation by multinational corporations, government policies, and international trade deals. Fighting against this machine means thinking globally and acting locally. This is why at the Encuentro each year, there is discussion on solidarity and economic globalization. Candace, would you please share those two letters with our worldwide radio listeners with anything else you wish to comment on?
Hi, my name is Candace Vallejo. I'm from Tampa, which is just a couple hours north of here. And over the years, I've lived in a couple of other places. Right now, I'm in Texas. And I've had the opportunity as a member of SFA to network with a number of other struggles, not just here in the U.S., but also internationally. And so that's brought some really amazing lessons personally. It's really changed for me some of my personal practice, not only what my struggle looks like, but what my life looks like on the day-to-day basis. And so in an effort to bring some of those lessons and share them with my compañeros and compañeras here, we had some new attempts to kind of share some of that through letters that some of the other organizations have written. And so this afternoon I'd like to share two letters with you all. The first letter comes from some new compas in the struggle that we met through the Engage Network, which is a network of students and youth here in the U.S., return study abroad students looking to continue doing social justice work here in the U.S., as well as other popular educators that are concerned with social justice and with using education as a tool for empowerment and for struggle. Gage is connected to a network of small farmers in Thailand. That network of small farmers is called the Alternative Agriculture Network. And so the Alternative Agriculture Network wrote us a letter for a panel that we had this afternoon on food justice, food sovereignty, and what these things look like internationally as well as here in the U.S. So I'm going to start with that one from Thailand. To the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. The Alternative Agriculture Network, ESAN, is a network of small-scale farmers in northeastern Thailand made up of more than 3,000 families. We are a movement of farmers, activists, NGOs, and organizers. We've come together to support independent careers, self-reliance, creating power and control over production inputs, and access to resources. We work together on preserving and expanding local seeds for use in alternative agriculture. We create spaces in the market to produce safe food for urban consumers. We monitor agriculture and trade policies and push for policies that represent our interests. We resist and struggle against policies that are obstacles in the development of family and community self-reliance. For example, GMO technology and corporate-controlled contract farming systems. As an organization of poor, small-scale farmers, we understand and are in solidarity with the struggle of laborers in the United States agriculture system. We also know that there are hundreds of northeastern Thai people from the province of ESAN working in the U.S. as agriculture laborers. The failure of rural and agricultural development in Thailand has created slums and migratory workers all around the world. Diversity in production to support family self-sufficiency has also been destroyed. Resources, land, and labor are shifted over to industry, sugarcane, cassava, and corn, and all for export, in a market where small farmers have no power or leverage. Farmers have incurred major losses and are in debt for life, debt to be inherited by their children. In this situation of oppression, we still have hopes to create food sovereignty. We've come together to resist the use of chemical inputs and to lower the costs of production to create family and community self-sufficiency. We also work on supporting local food systems. For example, more than 200 organic producers in Surin, Mahasarakham, and Yasothan provinces have created a market for safe food and built networks with urban consumers interested in supporting us. This has happened because of our hope to develop a process of creating an alternative society, which brings people of all statuses together. American people need to understand that they cannot deny the place of migrant labor in society and its connection to consumption. Many of these laborers are in the U.S. to work for the long term. We don't have a reason to criticize illegal migrants in America. Our American friends need to be aware of this system. We demand that society and the American people who consume tomatoes, every time they eat tomatoes, they know that they are eating goods that come from an unfair system. This is a food that comes from a system that abuses labor. We support a place to stand for CIW in every way. The AAN ESAN will stand together with the CIW in resistance for the rights that laborers deserve. There will be no poverty in a fair society. Power to poor people's movements around the world. Signed, Uban Yuwa, coordinator for the Alternative Agriculture Network in ESAN.
Candice, before you read the next solidarity letter from Brazil, I wanted to mention that the concerns expressed by the ESAN Thailand farm workers letter exemplify many serious agricultural issues throughout the Third World. I witnessed many of these detrimental agro-industrial impacts to the land and village communities, including northern Thailand, during the nearly 4 years I lived in Southeast Asia. In the 1970s, first as a U.S. Peace Corps Environment Program volunteer, and then later as a rural development advisor with the U.S. Agency for International Development, I lived with various mountain tribal peoples working on agroforestry and watershed conservation. These villagers, like most other small-scale farmers in the tropics, have become victims of an industrial farming system that has major ecological, economic, social, and human health impacts. It is a food production system that is not sustainable or equitable to the majority of the world's people. It must be understood that this system is global agribusiness. Primarily monoculture plantations or huge animal production factories, its primary motive is corporate profit. Agribusiness doesn't really care about the well-being of hungry people or improving the local economy. It doesn't care about farm workers making a fair living wage or people getting sick from toxic agricultural chemicals. Agro-industrial agriculture certainly doesn't care about protecting aquifers or the environment. The modern agro-industrial system operates through a synergy of government policies, financial institutions, trade contracts, and giant multinational agricultural sector corporations. The system's origin stems from the so-called Green Revolution technology developed in the mid-20th century. The Green Revolution was based on crop genetics, chemical fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, large-scale irrigation, and machinery. Village farmers were enticed by government technicians and businessmen to adopt this new farming system that made many promises. In a very short time, the promises turned into tragedy. Farmers went bankrupt, and many lost their land due to default on loans for high-cost ag chemicals and machine cultivators. Without these expensive chemical inputs, the genetic so-called high-yield crops didn't produce much of a harvest. There were many negative social, economic, and environmental consequences. Chemical residue in the fields affected soil health. This backlash resulted in great declines in production. Agrochemical runoff contaminated land and water, causing human health problems. Livestock also became sick and died. When farmers attempted to replant fields with their traditional varieties, the land would no longer yield much. Since the Green Revolution varieties were grown for the export market, the availability of food for local consumption declined while prices skyrocketed. Farmers were worse off than before the introduction of Green Revolution technology. In India, many farmers committed suicide. The Green Revolution was a result of a number of international agricultural research institutes, United Nations agencies such as the UNFAO and UN Development Program, and the World Bank IMF. Some people feel that many of the scientists of the Green Revolution had sincere intentions and hopes that their research could really ameliorate world hunger and malnutrition. Many of us, however, feel that multinational agricultural and chemical corporations' motivations for promoting the Green Revolution was solely to make money. The introduction of Green Revolution technology, especially in third world countries, encouraged large-scale corporate plantations of single crops that were primarily grown as money-making commodities. The latest chapter in this agricultural globalization scheme is biotechnology. It is a combination of big business and science with a pinch of greed thrown in. Biotechnology, based on genetic engineering, has created new genetically modified organisms. GMOs are agribusiness's most dangerous and scary development. Agricultural biotechnology goes way beyond plant and animal breeding by artificial selection and hybridization. Biotechnology, as defined by the UN Convention on Biodiversity, is, quote, any technological application that uses biological systems, living organisms, or derivatives thereof to make or modify products or processes for specific use, unquote. The introduction of foreign genes into crops and livestock to increase production and profits without regard to negative consequences is a very dangerous practice. Despite it being called green biotechnology, biotech is not healthy, safe, or reliable. As biotech micropropagation and transgenetics is a 21st century science, many of us call Frankenstein food. Besides the many probable human health problems from genetic engineering and many serious threats to ecosystems, this industry is controlled by only a few huge multinational corporations. Companies like Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, Monsanto, Syngenta, and ProAg wield tremendous economic and political influence over agricultural policy and food production throughout the world. The United Nations and many other international agricultural development organizations are aggressively pushing this new biotechnology that we know is unsustainable. In the United States, over the years, many small family farms have been lost to corporate agriculture. Unfortunately, this trend continues. American agriculture is now mostly big business. Their large operations are more plantation scale or livestock factories. This conventional system relies more and more on large applications of chemicals and irrigation water. It is very damaging to the land. Runoff pollutes water resources. Farming decisions are now made more by corporate executives and commodity dealers than farmers. This is very different from the real food paradigm that values community, democracy, and an equitable system. Agro-industrial agribusiness is biocolonialism, which has little regard for farm workers.
The next letter that we have here is a letter from MIPA, which is how you would say it in Portuguese, and that's MPA. What that means in Portuguese is Movimento dos Pequenos Agricultores. In English, that would be literally translated as Small Agriculturalist Movement. What's interesting about this letter in particular is the context in which many small farmers in Brazil and in most of Latin America and indeed around the world find themselves today. It's a history of colonialism that has shaped what agriculture systems look like. In the U.S., it looks much different than it does in many other places. And that's primarily because I believe when capitalism developed, there never was an intention for the global south to become as developed as the U.S. The intention was always for the U.S. and other developed nations, as they call them, to be able to extract whatever resources capitalism needs from these other places. So it makes sense that to this day, 500 years later, these other places in the world are still under the thumb of this dependency that was created from the initial colonialism that started so long ago. The letter is titled Campesino Struggle, Food Sovereignty, and Popular Power. We of MIPA, Movimiento dos Pequeños Agricultores Brasil, are a movement whose objective is to produce healthy food for the auto-consumption and feeding of the country, and which works towards the recuperation of campesino identity and culture, respecting regional diversity and seeing this diversity as connected to a strategy that affirms the struggle for food sovereignty. In this historic moment in which multinationals and financial capital control the supply chain of food and its distribution, movements have to create large struggles to reverse this situation. Historically, campesinos are the ones who provide food for societies. And in this context just described, we see that to reach food sovereignty, campesinos need to have a few structural changes within the society, including reclaiming control over sementes criollas, which means locally owned, locally produced, inherited seeds that have been passed down over generations that are not genetically modified or changed in any way. Completely organic, you might say. The second demand is an integrated agrarian reform, where the task of the state is not only to distribute land, but to help provide the conditions to produce food, including running water, light, technical assistance, housing, and culturally appropriate education. The third demand, campesino-controlled organic distribution outside of the multinationals and their spaces of control. The fourth includes instruments of commercialization with and within urban society that does not pass through the hands of big supermarket groups and corporations. The theme of food sovereignty begins with families, integrating the old models of organization, and each family and community has to construct their plan to depend less and less on the market, having a family-based plane of production, which is integrated into the community production, for the cooperation between families and for the better organization of the community. The struggle for food sovereignty cannot be isolated from the bigger pictures of campesino struggles and other struggles that are working to construct a different model of society outside of capitalism. The campesino struggle and the struggle for food sovereignty must be linked to other struggles for popular power and campesino communities in which the community is integrated fully. One question that we have for you is, how would the U.S. reach a food sovereignty which includes both the production of healthy food and work without exploitation? And this is signed by Beto Ribeiro, who is from the state of Bahia in the northeast of Brazil and member of MIPEA.
By turning countries into labor camps, modern slavers and dragons, champions of freedom. Sinister, cynical instrument who makes the gun into a sacrament. The only response to the deification of tyranny by so-called developed nations, idolatry of ideology. North, south, east, west, kill the best and buy the rest. Just spend a buck to make a buck. You don't really give a flying fuck about the people in misery. Portable
passing themselves off as leaders. Kiss the ladies, shake hands with the fellas, and it's open for business like a cheap bordello. And they call it democracy. 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 See the loaded eyes of the children too, trying to make the best of it the way kids do. One day you're gonna rise from your habitual feast to find yourself staring down the throat of the beast they call the revolution. IMF, dirty MF, takes away everything you can get, always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with these affordable debt. Call it democracy. And they call it democracy. And they call it democracy.
By singer-songwriter Bruce Cockburn. The name of that song was Call It Democracy, speaking about the International Monetary Fund. The IMF is infamous as a global economic power that is supposed to ensure financial stability and foster cooperative banking and trade in order to encourage growth, especially within the less developed countries. Many people consider the IMF, along with the World Bank and World Trade Organization, as major components of economic globalization. Economic globalization is seen by many to be a 21st century form of colonialism, exploiting the lands and peoples of the Third World. The IMF is heavily involved in international agribusiness trade and investment. Multinational corporations and the agricultural sector have certainly benefited. The rural poor, small-scale, village-level farmers are the victims of the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, and World Trade Organization system. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. I am here at the 2009 Fifth Annual Immokalee and Cointreau, talking with students and youth who are concerned about social and economic justice. My guest, sitting here at my broadcast table, is Candice Vallejo. Candice, those letters from farmers in Thailand and Brazil expresses the world's poor's need for social and economic justice, especially in agriculture and natural resources. Fundamental to this is agrarian reform and sustainable land use. This requires that land and water resources be controlled by the people, not a few rich elites that run government, banking, trade, and corporations. Unfortunately, this has been the history since Europeans first planted their flags on other people's homelands more than 500 years ago. I too believe, as you mentioned, that the industrialized nations never intended the global south to be really independent from colonial plunder and control over land, water, agricultural commodities, and natural resources. I alluded to this in my earlier comments about agro-industrials' green revolution technology and genetic engineering of GMOs. The legacy of colonialism has become economic globalization. Many of us believe this is a major reason for global poverty and hunger. The affluent developed nations requires the third world's land and resources for their wealth, as do the small number of ruling elites of our country. This is why agrarian reform and other popular movements are cut down, sometimes quite brutally. Rich countries and global institutions like the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization are great at appearing that they sincerely care about the world's poor, about social and economic inequality. There have been numerous conferences and declarations over the years. Millions of dollars have been spent in the name of development. Much of the money has been stolen by corruption or squandered to support the multitude of aid organizations and lavish lifestyles of so-called experts who really don't understand the culture and needs of the peoples they supposedly are there to help. Unfortunately, little has changed, nor given global economic and political realities, will there be much change or justice for the world's poor, especially peasant farmers, in the near future. Candace, those two letters that spoke so eloquently about poor people's rights for dignity, equality, and justice put focus on the need for strengthening one's outreach to other struggles. It is important to keep in mind the broader, larger picture of injustice as we work in a more focused segment of injustice. The concept of thinking globally and acting locally is so important. What are your thoughts about this aspect of coalition building?
I think some of the first and most simple things that we can do include asking ourselves what we're doing in our own lives that are influencing people in other places. And that doesn't just mean, where am I buying my food from? But also, for example, how much energy do I use? I think in the US, we don't often think of our energy consumption as related to other people's food struggles, but indeed they are. In Brazil, as well as in a number of other places in the global south right now, people are confronting multinational corporations that are robbing land, making it no longer profitable for people to be on their land, and then taking that land and instead of using it to produce food that perhaps the multinationals might sell back to the country they're in, as well as to the global north, what they're actually doing is planting sugarcane, eucalyptus, and corn for biofuels. So these biofuels are not staying in the countries that they're being produced in. They're being shipped off, used in Europe, used in North America. So when we think about what we can do and how to begin to build coalitions, I think some of the first and easiest things we can do is to think about what steps can I take in my own life. And I don't think that we can overstate the importance of that, because while it may seem very simple, this notion of thinking globally and acting locally, or even in this case, thinking globally and acting personally, the importance of that is huge. I recently did some documentary work in Brazil, and we asked people a number of questions, including what kinds of things can we do to be in solidarity with you, and what kinds of things do you want to know, you know, what kinds of questions do you have for us? We're sitting here asking you a lot of questions, but what questions do you have for us that you'd like us to think about? And for the most part, a lot of the responses revolved around people wanting to know what our movements look like, but people also wanting to know how much we really know about them and saying, hey, we want you to learn more about us. And so that starts with reading, but for them, they were also saying, come here and visit us, and don't just come and stay in a hotel, but come and stay in our communities. Get to know us. Learn our names, learn what our lives are like, see how we live, see what our culture is, and share with us what yours is. And so for a lot of the people that I spoke to in Brazil, it was a lot about this really horizontalized interchange and communication. I think for me, what that increasingly looks like in terms of horizontalizing that exchange and the ability to exchange is doing fundraising here, so that we can bring organizers and people working on social justice issues in the global south to the U.S. Because we so often have the the ability to just buy ourselves a plane ticket. $500, that's a lot of money, but to somebody from the U.S., we can save over the course of a few months or a year and be able to get $500 to buy a plane ticket and go somewhere for a little while. For somebody in Brazil, that's practically out of the question, let alone the question of the visa and how much a visa costs and these other things. And that's a strategy that Engage, the organization that connected us here in SFA and in Immokalee to the AAN in Thailand, doing a lot of fundraising, grassroots fundraising here in the U.S., to be able to bring small farmers, people who are part of movements in Thailand here to the U.S., to not only travel and share their stories, but to also see what our struggles look like and be able to bring all of those things back so that that exchange is going both ways. And I think that that's hugely important. We're asking ourselves about coalition building, if we're asking ourselves about how to build stronger movements and how to build movements not just across different areas of movements. You know, a lot of people think there's the environmental movement and there's the labor movement. I don't see it that way. I see it that there is one movement for justice, and we're all fighting for justice and dignity and the right that all people have to these things. You know, but for people who think about different movements and building bridges across movements, or even, you know, on a larger scale, like you and I have been talking about, building movements across international borders and across continents and huge bodies of waters. In any case, it's about exchange. It's about horizontalizing the process of exchange. It's about dialogue, and it's about listening. And dialogue isn't just about us talking, and it's not just in the moment of us having conversation. This dialogue that I'm having here with you is going to stay with me when I go home and give me things to think about later, as it will with you and with those that are listening today. You know, and so that dialogue continues and can create other dialogues. And so it's kind of a constant process of back and forth between you and I and us and everyone else we interact with, as well as kind of continuing conversations and really constantly looking at what we're learning and how that can shift a little bit what we're doing, how that can teach us ways that we can live more in touch with ourselves and our own values for dignity, and at the same time being respectful and respecting of and supporting other people's right to that dignity and that justice that they deserve.
Candace, I appreciated your point about the interconnections between issues that some consider as separate. For example, supporting farm workers requires understanding many aspects, including agribusiness, farming methods, government policy, labor, and environmental issues. This is why activists should see the struggle as an interrelated mix of problems that must be addressed together in a unified context. The letters from Thailand and Brazil also raise an issue of great importance, namely cultural knowledge and maintaining traditional farming practices that are being replaced by multinational agribusiness corporations sanctioned by governments. For me, as an indigenous person, this is biocolonialism. Would you please comment on this?
Something that one of the compañeros in the letter, actually I think both of the letters shared some of this with us, the importance of maintaining local knowledge, maintaining local seed production, maintaining autonomy, and especially in Brazil, part of the struggle there is a cultural struggle and focusing on continuing and maintaining campesino culture. And I didn't know what that meant at first when I got to the community that I was working with. As I stayed and listened and learned, I came to recognize what that really is looking like. Young children are being sent to these schools that are far away from their communities, where they're learning a science that is inside of a science classroom that has nothing to do, as they say, is culturally inappropriate. It has nothing to do with the work that their parents are doing. And so when they come home at the end of the day, they haven't learned anything about how to produce food. They haven't learned anything about how to continue to germinate and harvest seeds. They haven't learned anything about how to continue the soil producing, and instead, they're learning the science that is coming from capitalism, that is also the science that is being sold back to us through these multinational corporations. And not only that, but along with that, losing their culture through music, through art, through traditional storytelling, all of these other things, which I'm sure you can absolutely relate to. It's the same thing that has happened all over the world time and time again.
Candace, I want to sincerely thank you for sharing your thoughts today on Wolf Mountain Radio. I learn a lot every time I speak with you at different events we've attended over the years. I always like to ask program guests if they have a final comment to express to our worldwide listeners.
Thank you very much for opening the space for me to share some of these stories. The more I share them, the more I'm able to learn from them again and again, and that's so important. And the more I share with other people, the more I'm able to learn from their struggles and see the connections between what I already know and kind of deepen my knowledge of these things in that exchange. So that's really valuable. Something I have learned recently, I'm still learning, I'm still struggling with, and I think that we all do regardless of our age, but especially when you're a young person, especially a young person brought up in the global north, who begins to become conscious, who begins to become politicized, who begins to ask the questions of why and how. How could it be different? Why is it this way? What can we do about it? What do I want to do about it? We start to confront these huge systems of power and everything seems so great. And here in the US, we are constantly bombarded with messages and with advertisements and with flashy pictures. But that doesn't mean that we're so bombarded with these things that we don't know about what goes on outside of us, or we don't know about the struggles in the world. Because at the same time, we're also bombarded by the 10,000 messages of people struggling around the world. Help save this species, or help support this clean energy thing, or help do this or that. And we're constantly bombarded with these other messages that are asking us to do something, but we're not really sure what. And when you're being pulled back and forth between this urge to just kind of live a simple, easy life and take care of yourself and survive and just be happy, knowing that there are other people miserable and other people suffering and all this other stuff, it can feel pretty disempowering and make us want to kind of shut off and make us just kind of turn inwardly and say, you know what, all I can do is my life and me and my family. And I don't think that helps any of us, because inevitably it just continues things the way that they are. But it's important to remember that we cannot feel disempowered by these huge systems, because again, in each small act, in each dialogue, in each hug and smile we share, in each book we read and lesson we learn, there are these moments of resistance. In each word we write and in each kind of story we listen to. So for me, the struggle has been not to let this system disempower me yet again, because there was the first disempowerment that I was unaware of, that I wasn't conscious of. I became conscious to that disempowerment and then became to feel empowered. But after a while, came to feel like things were too great, things were too hard. And it's important to not lose sight of these beautiful small things in life that are indicative of the fact that the hope and the resistance and this other way of being and living has always existed and will continue to exist. And it's really important to me to not focus on the disempowering stories, on the people that are suffering, on all of the negative energy that is in the world and that is present in that suffering and in that oppression. It is increasingly important to me to focus on the resistance, to focus on the happiness, to focus on the small and beautiful, simple moments that humanize us and that remind us that we're alive. That can be something as simple as the color green of a leaf that I might be looking at, or as strong as examples of what has happened in Immokalee over the last 20 years and the turnaround that this community has begun to see through the work of allies across the nation and here. So in closing, I just want to remind other people, especially other young people, that no matter what, we cannot give up. We cannot give up hope. Because when we give up, when we stop hoping, when we turn inwards and only take care of ourselves and our families and don't think a little bit beyond that, when we say that it's too great and I can't do anything, so all I'm going to do is make sure that me and mine are taken care of, the system wins. But if we refuse to stop hoping, if we refuse to stop dreaming, they're never going to win. We always will.
You are listening to Yatkidichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
I wish to again thank you, Candace, for being my guest today on Wolf Mountain Radio. I appreciate your concern and activism for social and economic justice. It's a pleasure to see you again. Well, dear friends, we are nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. People interested to learn more about the SFA in Cuentros, please visit the Student Farmwork Alliance website, www.sfalliance.org. As always, Yacht Kadishi Native Center encourages everyone to get involved in efforts to protect and defend Mother Earth, humanity, and all life. There are many important issues to care about. As I like to say, it's better to be active today than radioactive tomorrow. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. We shall conclude today's broadcast with music by R. Carlos Nakai and Emo Chip Dabney off their Kingdom Records CD entitled Edge of the Century. The song we will hear is the title track. To me, Edge of the Century is a metaphor for the time we are living in the early years of the 21st century. The type of world we and future generations live in depends upon how we human beings treat each other and our planet. There are many serious problems threatening humanity and our biosphere. I hope more careful attitudes towards our life will be the wisdom of this new millennium. Until next week, please be well. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakwasin to all of our relations.